You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast on multi-cancer early detection, hosted by Med Learning Group. This podcast is one in a series of five geared towards several specialty practices. In this podcast, Dr. Joshua Lang will discuss the implications of MCED testing within hematology and oncology practice. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Lang, who is joining us today. Dr. Lang is an associate professor of medicine in the Department of Hematology, Medical Oncology, and Palliative Care, and associate director of translational research at the University of Wisconsin-Carbone Cancer Center. He is one of the early pioneers of blood-based cancer screening and has been consistently involved in clinical trials of these methods. Thank you for being here with us today, Dr. Lang.
Thank you, Chris. Happy to be here today.
Let's start with a little bit of background. When we say blood-based cancer screening, what do we mean? And how can you use blood to find different types of cancer?
It's a great question. It's sort of this idea that when cancer cells initially develop, that those cells still die. And when they die, they can release proteins or DNA that can actually be found in circulation. And this also relates to how cancer can spread from one place in the body to another. And there's always a highway in which it has to travel. And most times that highway is blood. So in some situations, we can even find whole cancer cells in a blood draw as well. So it's sort of this idea that we can find multiple different alterations that are specific to cancer using just a blood sample.
So why is there a need for this type of screening? Aren't there existing recommendations for several different types of cancer screening by the CDC?
Absolutely. And it's really a critical issue. And we know that the earlier we detect a cancer, the easier it is to cure. And that should always be our goal for patients, is how can we cure them of their cancer? So whether that's cure with surgery or radiation or some other kind of therapy, it really is that detecting those cancers early makes it easier to achieve the best outcome for our patients. So we do have some cancers for which we do have screening tests, meaning how do we identify them at earlier stages of disease? You know, great examples of that are breast cancer, for example. We talk about mammograms. Lung cancer, where for patients who have a smoking history undergoing low-dose CT scans, also has been shown effective to detect lung cancer earlier at a more curable stage. Colon cancer, when we think about screening with colonoscopies or with the Cologuard test. Prostate cancer with PSA screening, though there are some challenges with regarding the specificity to find true cancer as opposed to something that's not. Cervical cancer as well, another disease for which we do have already FDA-cleared, FDA-approved screening tests. Unfortunately, there's many cancers for which we don't have any screening tests at all. And we only know about them when a patient, usually when they come in with some kind of symptoms that leads them to call their doctor.
So as far as actually using multi-cancer early detection tests in practice, what's available right now and how do physicians get their hands on it? And, you know, moreover, aside from that, what other tests are going to be available in the near future that you know of?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I think, and this is where, you know, we look at the different types of cancers out there, especially both the frequency of these kinds of cancers, as well as the risks. And we also know that there's healthcare disparities as well that impact patient risk of developing different types of cancers. That's where we already have screening tools out there, as mentioned before. When we think about these multi-cancer enhanced detection assays, the hope is that we can find molecular changes using those blood samples that will allow us to identify multiple kinds of cancer. Now, the way those tests work is it's looking for either proteins that can be cancer-specific, DNA or DNA mutations, or even epigenetically modified DNA, so methylated DNA, that has specific signatures that associate with different cancers. So the hopes with these kinds of MCED tests is that we can look for all these different kinds of protein or DNA modifications that would allow us to look at multiple cancers very specifically. Now, in terms of where we're at right now, we have many different tests that are being developed and are currently undergoing clinical trial testing right now as well. So whether that's assays by Grail, Exact Sciences, there are many other companies really excited and moving forward in this space.
So Dr. Lang, when an MCED test comes back, what information do they provide to you, the clinician, and the patient?
So the results from these tests, there's two components. The first is there cancer or not? So a positive or a negative signal. So that helps us to understand, is this something that the patient is at risk for? The next part, which is also critically important, is tissue of origin, meaning if they got a positive signal, where did that signal come from? And can that give us some guidance on what we need to do for the next diagnostic steps?
Okay, and to kind of latch onto that, when you're explaining the results of a MCED test to a patient, whether positive or negative, how do you describe to them the difference between a cancer signal and a test which establishes a cancer diagnosis.
Absolutely. So when we think about screening tests, and that's fundamentally what that positive or negative result is for the cancer signal, it's asking, is there a patient at risk? So we're screening to say, is there something present that means we need to do further testing? So that then leads us to the diagnosis. So when we diagnose cancer, that can really only be done by looking at actual cancer cells under a microscope or seeing something on an imaging scan, such as a CAT scan or an MRI or a PET scan. There are some kinds of cancers where we're also looking at blood samples as well to diagnose that disease. For example, leukemias. Those are types of cancers that we look at cancer cells floating in blood. Now, depending on what we see on those scans, that may lead to further diagnostic workup. So for example, if we saw something worrisome in the pancreas, that might lead to an endoscopy that would allow us to get closer to that organ and get tissue, again, to look under the microscope and make that final diagnosis. So there's a series of steps, depending on what the result comes back as the potential tissue of origin, that would lead to establish, does this person have cancer and what type of cancer is it?
So what are some of the specific results from studies such as Pathfinder, which discussed the Galleri test, as you mentioned, and DETECT-A, which was another test, and maybe some of the other investigational clinical trials for that clarified the percentage of patients with a positive cancer signal? And more specifically, what is the rate of confirmed cancer in these patients upon further evaluation, and how long does this resolution take?
Absolutely. So that's one of the reasons why it's so critical to do these kinds of prospective clinical trials, because even though we're excited about the potential of MCED tests, we still have to do these kinds of prospective clinical trials to find out how well do they work in terms of both identifying cancer that can be cured, in addition to, well, how many cancers could potentially be missed. So for example, when we look at the Pathfinder results that were presented at ESMO in 2022, they were evaluating, their primary objective was time to achieve a diagnostic resolution. So confirming, is there cancer present or not? And what they found was that there was a median time of 79 days and a diagnostic resolution was made within 3 months for almost three quarters of patients. So when we dig into that data, we find that a cancer signal was detected in about 1.4% of patients with a specificity of 99.1% and a positive predictive value of between 38 to 43.1%. And importantly, a negative predictive value, meaning if the cancer test came back as a negative result, the negative predictive value was 98.6%. So we're really seeing some strong performance in that particular clinical context.
So in your opinion, how does a specific cancer stage affect the reliability of an MCED test?
It's a great question. So when we think about staging for cancer, the traditional approaches are what we just think of as a stage 1, 2, 3, or 4, with stage 4 being the highest burden and often metastatic cancer. So when we think about how well an MCED can detect cancer, it's really this idea that if someone has more cancer, they're more likely to have cancer material, whether that's DNA, proteins, or other analytes floating in circulation that the MCED test is able to identify. So for example, a patient with prostate cancer, a stage 4 metastatic prostate cancer, has a much higher sensitivity to find that cancer because there's more prostate cancer cells in circulation, compared to a patient with a stage 1 cancer, a small or localized disease. Now, our hope with the MCED test is that these will be effective at those lower stages, which will increase our ability to find patients who are more likely to be cured from their cancer. So when we look at the Galleri test as a really good example, they found that the sensitivity for cancers that had a stage 1 through 3, that the sensitivity was about 67.3% for the 12 pre-specified cancer types. When they look across all cancer types, it was 43.9%. In the Galleri study, they also found, as we broke it a little more granular with the stage 1, the diagnosis in terms of the sensitivity was about 39%, and that increases to 69% in stage 2, 83% in stage 3, and 92% in stage 4. So that kind of association really does, it helps us understand, how well the assays work or don't work. Understanding again that for many cancers, even a stage 1, 2, or even 3 diagnosis is still potentially curable. So that's where we want to use these MCED tests to identify patients in that screening setting that would lead to better diagnostics and hopefully earlier interventions to increase our ability to cure patients of cancer. Now, where we're at right now, we actually don't have any tests that have been FDA approved. though there are tests out there that are commercially available. And I think that's a critical issue that we're still trying to understand. You know, what's the sensitivity and the specificity of those tests now that we do have a couple that are commercially available?
So when you use a multi-cancer screening test in the hematology oncology setting specifically, what do you do when you receive a positive result from the test?
Yeah, so what we're looking at is that if a test comes back, we ask, well, what was the cancer that was flagged? Meaning, was there a specific disease that was identified? You know, so for example, if we're looking at one of the tests from that's been developed with GRAIL, such as the Galeri test, you know, we get that blood sample result. And if it says there's no cancer detected, you know, we're still trying to understand how sensitive is that for all of those different diseases. But that's where we may be able to tell our patient that this is if they're not having any symptoms at all, that this is something where we may be able to continue to monitor them. Or if they are having symptoms, that may push us towards other types of diagnostic studies. Now, if we do get a cancer signal detected, this is where we then ask, well, what was the origin of that cancer? Where is it coming from? Because a positive MCED test does not diagnose a cancer. What it does tell us, though, is it gives us some direction of what kinds of studies should we be performing. So whether that's CAT scan imaging or some type of PET imaging modality, or maybe this is something where we need to speak with some of our other colleagues, whether in urology, for example, if we're looking at bladder cancer, or GI, if we're concerned about esophageal cancer, that we then have to move from there into asking, you know, what type of cancer is this patient potentially facing, and how do we diagnose it? I will say that's one of the other really critical aspects that we face with these types of assays is specificity. You know, we know from prior years of research, we go back a decade, you know, we used to think that some of our other tests would be effective, but they ended up having poor specificity, meaning that they found something in blood that actually was not related to cancer. There's a whole field of research in what we call clonal hematopoiesis, which is just that every person is different. And as we get older, sometimes we can see small mutations in blood cells that aren't related to cancer at all. But if you're looking at a tissue biopsy of a cancer, you might say, wow, that really is diagnostic. So as these tests have evolved and are working through these really critical issues with clonal hematopoiesis, for example, that's helping us develop better specificity, but also will be more effective at telling us, you know, what type of screening tools should we be performing, but diagnostic tools to say, yes, is there cancer or not?
So these tests are relatively new to the market. And as you mentioned, you know, one of them is available at this point with other coming down the line. So I would suspect that there's some hesitation on the part of patients to actually use them, and understandably so, because they're so new. In the hematology oncology setting, what are some of the best practices for actually using these tests? And prior to that, even getting patients on board with them?
You know, the way that I think about this is very much being able to say, you know, what is the sensitivity and specificity? We also think about terms of positive predictive value, meaning if a test comes back positive, how often is it right? Or negative predictive value, meaning if the test is negative, how confident can we say that, yeah, this is a patient who is not at risk for these diseases? Now, there are multiple clinical trials ongoing that are answering these exact questions. And I'm very excited over the next number of years to get that data back so we can more specifically say who should have these types of tests. At a high level, we really want to think about patients who are over the age of 50, who are at an elevated cancer risk, including those patients who may have family members, so that there's something, whether that's a family history of cancer or specific types of cancer, or maybe even if there's something that could be inherited in terms of a genetic or a germline mutation that might put them at a higher risk developing a different type of disease. So really thinking about patients who are in that elevated risk category. We certainly do not recommend these kinds of tests for patients who are under the age of 50 and certainly under the age of 21, where the frequency of those cancers is exceptionally rare, or in individuals who are pregnant. And also, very importantly, if patients are undergoing active cancer therapy for another disease, the likelihood that this cancer would find something else different from what that patient is being treated with, also exceptionally unlikely. So those are the things that will help prevent us from having those false positive tests. I think it's also really critical to help patients understand that this is only one step in a process, meaning that if the test is positive, what do we do next to actually make the final diagnosis? Meaning we have to get a biopsy, we have to have tissue, we can look at it under a microscope to say, yes, there is cancer, or that there is not cancer. So it's really that first next step in the process of being able to say who is at a higher risk that we should push towards further diagnostic testing. Now, it's also important, and we've learned this from many of these other screening tools that I mentioned earlier that are already in clinical use, is that there's also a risk of what we call false positive tests, meaning that we get a positive signal and we go through those next steps of testing, whether it's PET scans, colonoscopies, et cetera. And what if we don't find anything? Again, these are things that we experienced when we were first learning about this issue of clonal hematopoiesis. And it's really important to be able to discuss with our patients that this is one step in a testing paradigm. And if we get a positive test for an MCD assay, but all those next steps in terms of diagnosing the cancer are negative, that we should be relieved that, yes, that MCD test was positive and we need to be watching closely, but the diagnosis, we didn't see anything there, and certainly not something that's going to harm someone in the short term, though we will want to monitor them more closely going forward. We also think about false negative tests, meaning what if we did a test, we didn't get a result, but maybe sometime in the next 6, 12, 24 or longer, in terms of months going down the road, that somebody does have something that becomes an issue. So that's where we think about how well do those tests work. So false and negatives are also important to discuss with patients that it may not be perfect. And there may be other cancers that are not a part of that MCD assay as well. We also want to make patients aware of in terms of what it is we can look for with these tests, but also what we can't.
So when you're confirming a positive signal for some type of cancer, and let's say some type of blood cancer, since you're in the hematology clinic, maybe multiple myeloma or leukemia or lymphoma, something like that, what strategies do you use to handle patient anxiety or nervousness during that area between receiving a positive signal and confirming the diagnosis?
It's absolutely critical that we put the patient at the heart of this decision-making process of what do we do next once we get a positive result. So this is really where we want to work closely, both our patient and their primary care provider who may have ordered that particular test, and understand what are those next steps. So for example, if a positive result comes back that's concerning for a leukemia or a myeloma, that's something where the next step in the diagnostic workup is actually a blood test. And that's something that can be done very quickly, even within a day or two. And that would then trigger what are those next steps in that diagnostic paradigm. And how do we get that patient to the right provider to do those next steps? So that's something where an integrated health system that has that kind of seamless capability of a positive test comes back to a primary care physician that informs the patient, but then triggers additional blood work that should be done in a very rapid order, and leading to other CAT scans or other imaging studies performed, hopefully within a week or two, that can help say, is this something that needs a biopsy done? Now, as you can imagine, doing biopsies are more complex. And it does take time once the biopsy is performed and for the tissue to be analyzed to make that final diagnosis. That's really where I think the opportunities are, especially as we use these MCED tests more and more, that we can develop workflows that will shrink that time, you know, from the roughly 2 to 3 months down to something that we hope will be shorter on the order of weeks of time. So I'm really excited about where MCED tests can guide us in terms of improving our workflows for exactly these situations. I will say, you know, we do have screening tests for a few other diseases, a few other types of cancer, and we figured out how to do this in a much more rapid fashion. So I'm very confident that similarly, as MCED tests are rolled out, the health system will be able to adapt and respond more rapidly. Now, in terms of the anxiety and nervousness that my patients face, it's very much about, well, when? When will we find out what's going on? Or how will we make that next diagnostic intervention or procedure or scan? When will that get done? So being able to help patients understand, you know, what are the next steps in the process and how quickly will that get done really is important for helping with anxiety and nervousness that comes from patients, as well as being able to say, you know, if it is ultimately a negative test, this is also the next steps that we do in terms of monitoring thereafter. So a number of different ways that we can help patients depending on the results of the MCED.
So overall, and you kind of alluded to this, what are the implications of this early screening overall in hematology practice? And I mean, in other words, how does this new testing affect the way you screen for cancer in the hematology oncology clinic in particular?
I think especially in the hematology oncology space, this is where we think about MCED tests. They're more likely to be rolled out within our primary care practitioner colleagues. And as they generate or develop results where somebody comes back with a positive MCED test, the implications for us are to be able to rapidly respond to that, meaning that a patient is concerned for a diagnosis of cancer, including some of the cancers that are on this list that can be very aggressive. And we don't want to wait months. We want to turn that into weeks or days of time before we get them in to see us. So that kind of close interaction, being able to respond rapidly, is something that all of our practices need to be prepared to do and update, because no one wants to either miss a diagnosis or take too long to go from diagnosis to therapy. So those are some of the opportunities, I think, in terms of how we practice medicine in our clinics, especially that we have so many new therapies available for patients, depending on what the diagnosis is. You know, the sooner we can give them, the more likely that patient is going to have a better outcome. So that's something as providers, I'm really excited at the opportunities that these types of MCED tests provide that will allow us to hopefully increase our ability to cure patients of a cancer and decrease the number of patients who are presenting with late stage or metastatic cancers by the time they get to see us.
So just to follow up on the diagnostic confirmation, how long roughly does it take from a positive screening test, whether it's a true positive or a false positive, to actually achieving diagnostic confirmation? And I'm thinking from a patient standpoint, when you get a positive screening test, you're kind of scared and you're thinking about how long does it take before you actually confirm diagnostically that there is or isn't cancer there?
It's one of the things, Chris, that I really appreciate with the clinical trials that are being done that are testing these types of MCD tests is really making this from a real-world perspective, that if there is a positive test, that the provider is alerted within 1 to 2 weeks that the positive test has resulted, and that provider is then either able to order that next test that needs to be done to say, you know, as an example, if a test comes back positive for, you know, potentially a lung cancer, that provider is then able to order that diagnostic CT or PET scan. And that's something else that can be completed ideally within 1 to 2 weeks, depending on where people live and what their health system capacity is. So that's really critical that we're able to get to that diagnostic test, ideally within just a few weeks of getting that blood test result. And then that would lead us, if the scan says, yeah, there's something that I'm worried about, that would then lead to the need for a biopsy. And ideally, especially at large health centers such as the University of Wisconsin, we're able to do those diagnostic procedures, hopefully within a couple of weeks of time or sooner. So then we're able to tell that patient, yes, this is something that is a real cancer that needs further treatment, or that this is something that is not cancer, but we can continue to safely monitor that going forward.
Yeah, and that's something that would be hugely important to patients, I would think. If they received a positive screening test, you know, you'd want to know as soon as possible diagnostically, you know, to be able to confirm that or confirm that it's not there as well. But let's finish up on a few final thoughts. Where do you think all this is going to end up from a public health standpoint? And maybe some of the types of cancer you see, where do you see these tests being the most beneficial for patients?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when we look at a high level, and from data from the American Cancer Society, we know that less than 20% of cancers are detected by screening. So the hope with these different types of assays that maybe we can push the bar, and if we can get to 30, 40%, or even 75% or more, if we can achieve that, would increase our ability to cure patients. So, you know, think of that, that the opportunities, when we just think from the statistics perspective, that could lead to a decrease in maybe even 25% of all cancer deaths just from early detection. Obviously, again, we have to be very cautious about those risks of false positives or false negatives. But the opportunity to improve early detection of some of these cancers, including ones for which we don't have any screening tests at all. Again, I'm thinking about kidney cancer as another example for the patients that I care for. Earlier detection for a disease that can be cured with surgery is something that, you know, we don't want to miss those opportunities. So that's why I'm so excited about the opportunities that these types of MCED tests can provide to us in the future in terms of how we can cure those patients.
Well, that does sound really promising. It sounds like there's a lot of pieces in place to put a big dent in deaths from cancer and just early identification of it. But let's end there. Thank you very much, Dr. Lang. This has been a great discussion of the background of multi-cancer testing and how it's actually getting off the ground as a practical use for identifying cancer earlier, and also getting these patients on appropriate treatment, which is the end goal for finding these cancers. But that's it for today. Once again, thank you, Dr. Lang, for joining us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us as well. As a reminder, MedLearning Group offers many types of CME programs across a variety of disease states, including several hematology and oncology programs, which I invite you to explore on our website, www.medlearninggroup.com. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Grail, who provided unrestricted grants for this educational activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.